Hello and welcome to the Rhythm Changes Podcast. I'm your host, Will Chernoff, and my second album, Maybe Eventually, is out now. I released it on my own website, chernoffmusic.com, and I have a special code for you. If you buy it, use the promo code RCP at checkout on my website for Rhythm Changes Podcast, and you will get 25% off, and I'll mail it to you. Go to chernoffmusic.com and use the code RCP at checkout to get my second album, Maybe Eventually. All right. Well, you know what's fun about getting higher in the double digits towards the triple digits maybe later this year of episodes is looking back. Like 2 years ago, I had Arvind Ramdas on the show, and we talked a lot about this gentleman who is featured on our episode today. They've played together a whole bunch. I'm about to bring you a conversation with somebody who plays the bass like no other among people his age in this community. I have a lot of respect for him, and I had a great time chatting with him. That's up next. Our guest today is a fantastic young bass player in his fifth year at Capilano University. And ever since he showed up there, he's been a first call person for a lot of people who I'm sure we're going to talk about today, from Atlee King, Brad Turner, Arvind Ramdas, Max Huberdeau, Sharon Minamoto, Dave Sakula, many, many more that I've heard him play with over the last 2 or 3 years. This week, he's got 2 shows, at least for now. Check the gig list to really know. The Daniel Herzog and Ben Henriquez Quintet at Frankie's on April 11th and the Arvind Ramdas Quintet at Tyrant on April 12th. So please welcome to the Rhythm Changes Podcast, David Caballero.
Oh, man. Thanks so much for having me, man.
It's great to have you. How you doing?
Pretty good, yeah. I had mentioned before I was sick like a week ago and still just getting over that, but you know, feeling good today.
You are a fellow Coquitlam resident. Perhaps for longer than me. I have been for a year. Have you lived here for a long time?
Yeah, pretty much like my entire time in Canada. Just because like my family immigrated from Peru when I was only like 2 years old. And yeah, we just settled here because we have some family in the area and stuff. So pretty much been here the entire time.
Okay. So that would put you at about 20 years in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess 21. Yeah, yeah. So I'm 23 now.
That's exciting. How did your family end up choosing to come here? Was it because of those connections that you mentioned that you had in Coquitlam?
Yeah, yeah. I had, right now I have two of my mom's brothers live here. And so my grandma also lived with one of my uncles. And so it was just kind of the thing to do because they were already thinking about leaving the country for various reasons, right? Like with employment and also thinking about like a future for me and my brother and stuff. So they just figured they'd go to the place where they have the most connections, right?
Does your brother play music?
Yeah, yeah. He's a guitarist. He's a really good singer. Not really in the jazz realm. It's kind of more like pop music. He plays in church a lot. He's always been sort of involved in that side of things.
Right? Huh. That's super cool because that's another parallel that you have with Arvind Ramdas, because I mean, I've heard him play with his brother. We had that kind of special run of shows towards the end of last year when you had the Ramdas twins, right? And he's coming in and bringing outside jazz influences as well. But and you have that too, and you guys are so close. That's funny.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
And we got to have the Ramdas brothers and the Caballero brothers.
The Caballero brothers. Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to figure out some kind of what we would play, because he's not even coming from it, coming from like a jazz direction at all. So that could be interesting. I don't know.
So what I do these days to prepare for an episode, honestly, is not much more than going through the gig list and control F searching your name and just seeing where you've played. Now, sometimes when it's a first meeting with somebody, which it isn't with you, even though this is our first conversation of length, pretty much. I mean, I feel like I've heard and seen you so many times that I feel like I know you decently well just from hearing you play bass alone. But this is the first time where I ran out of space on my single sheet of paper from gigs that you've played. So I definitely didn't need to do any of my other tricks, like scrolling through a person's entire Instagram feed or something. The gig list speaks for itself when it comes to where you've played. But the latest one was you played at La Fabrique St. George. So how was that?
Yeah, that was a really good experience. I was like leading a trio, so I just sort of picked music that I knew that the people I hired would be comfortable with. And, you know, Max Huberdeau and Arvind, like, just the three of us, like, you know, we've hung out and played in sessions like so many times over the years. I think probably even, I mean, with Arvind going back to like 2019, but with Max, like, probably around that time too, like 2020 or something. So yeah. I just, you know, I knew that I didn't have to be thinking too much about like orchestrating everything to get it to go the way I wanted to and everything. It, you know, it just, I picked tunes that I knew that they would enjoy playing and that I enjoy playing. And it was just, yeah, it was just a good time. It was like a hang basically.
Yeah. You also mentioned before we hit record about the recent episode with Harmeet and about the bass player representation that's happening right now, which we're both embracing. We're happy to see. And one of the first things that she started bringing up was whether or not you think of yourself as a leader and to what extent. And she had her own kind of way that she broke that down and made it feel right for her. And you play so much as a side person. Does it actually feel any different when it's your name, or do you try and create the same vibe? How do you reckon with that?
I mean, I've only done it, I'd say, like 3 times at this point. And each time, I don't know, I try and pick the music and everything to kind of reflect like who I am, who I listen to, who I've checked out a lot, like what kind of aesthetics I want to be present in there. So in that way, it's like, it's a nice opportunity to kind of showcase that, because so much of like what I do is really trying to like capture what somebody else's vision for their music is, right? And so it's kind of, you know, some of it may be really aligning with what I listen to and the kind of things I like to play, but, you know, other times I'll really have to sort of check out the music more and you know, like investigate into this person's kind of musical outlook or whatever. So leading a band it's nice, because then I get to put this out and be like, okay, well, this is where I'm coming from. You know, this is the kind of tunes from records that I've checked out a lot. And yeah, it's just a nice chance to do that.
So it's kind of a similar vibe, but you feel like you have to do less homework.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, you know, it varies for different people, but yeah, you know, it's it definitely, I didn't need to have any music up there or anything. It was all, yeah, smooth sailing from the bass chair.
You caught the end of the Tangent Cafe era, which was my era. I went there countless times and spent countless dollars. And that was the place where I felt at home. And even though you're several years younger than me, I got to hear you play there several times. And with people who were your contemporaries, like you had an earlier group, which is a few years ago now, called the Ten Penny Trio with Noah Franchnolen and with Arvind. I heard you play with them at the Tangent, and you've played there with Andre Lachance. I think you've played there with Steve Caldestad and other people. So it's cool that you got to come in before that space left. And what I remember from one time you played there, maybe you were playing as a leader, maybe you weren't. I don't really recall, but that's where I started associating that you were a person who really likes to pick special tunes or choice tunes or obscure tunes, you might say, like from famous jazz artists, like maybe somebody like Duke Pearson or like certain 50s and 60s artists. Like you're digging deep into the record bin, sort of, and you're pulling out really interesting tunes. That's something that I started to notice that you did in the ensembles. And I remember I first noticed that back at the Tangent. Would you agree with that? Do you feel like that's something you enjoy doing?
Yeah, I would say so. I think you might be talking about this this quartet that I led with, it was Max Huberdeau on drums, and then these two friends of mine from CAP, is Clayton Poon on trumpet, who's been on the podcast, and then
yep,
Ethan Burney playing tenor saxophone. And that was like the first time ever like leading a band. And that was something I had in mind, because I would be listening to records and stuff and all of a sudden come across a tune that's like, you know, oh, this is really hip. And I don't know if I've heard anyone record this in any other instance or even like being on the scene and hearing people play it. And those are kind of moments that stand out to me when I'm at shows, is, you know, hearing, I mean, or, you know, original music too is cool, but also hearing stuff from the jazz canon that might have been, you know, maybe recorded once and then that's it, right? It's, you know, once I recognize that, it's like, I don't know, it's just exciting to me, that kind of material.
Right? Huh. So thank you. You filled in the blanks on this memory from 1 or 2 years ago that I was trying. So you were this was you as a band leader, and you mentioned you only done it a couple times. That was like one of the first times you were the band leader?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That was, I was super nervous for that one.
Okay. So yeah, I don't recall exactly which tunes you picked, but I think that's an important idea, and it reflects your overall kind of musical personality that I've heard from you a dozen or two dozen times that I've heard you so far, is that that's something you think about, that you're aware of how deep this tradition is. And one of your impulses is not always to just play original music all the time, but you're like, well, if I go back and I pick tunes that are super cool that were written at the time in the classic era, and I bring them ahead now, and they're ones that people don't really play, like that's basically as original music at this point, right? Like there's so much there.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a really interesting way of putting it. I don't know if I've thought about it in that way, but I guess it's true, right? It has the same kind of impact on the audience, right? Something that they haven't heard before. And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not like the only difference is, like, literally speaking, like you're not getting the SoCan check for it or whatever, but it's one, that's not a super significant amount of money anyway. And two, yeah, it's like if you're in the audience side, and it's going to, you know, the vast majority of these tunes are going to be new to those people anyways, because it's not like they have been up at CAFU learning them or anything like that either. So
right.
I appreciate that. And it's something that I haven't pursued, because I've been so far down the lane of original music that when I see you doing that, I'm like, wow, that's not what I've been doing. That's really cool.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. So I can't quite place where in time that was, but whenever doesn't really matter exactly when it was, I want to go back further than that. You can talk about your upbringing too on the way if you like, of course, however much you want to, but I'm curious how you arrived at CAP and when that was and what kind of memories you have of like how you got there. Because once you got there, it's like a rocket ship. You start playing with everybody, but how'd you get there?
Oh man. So I came into CAP like straight out of high school. I didn't have a gap year or anything. And so that was September 2019.
Okay.
And I actually ended up being there as an electric bass major at first. I'd never actually played upright or studied it in any capacity. So I admired like electric players like Jaco Pastorius, right? I was also checking out a lot of rock music at the time, like kind of came up listening to classic rock. And, you know, I didn't really have like a musical direction though that I was latching onto, right? I was just listening to a lot of different stuff, and like, I remember trying to, you know, I was like asking my teacher, Andre, like, oh, what are some like electric bass players I should check out? You know, because I kind of didn't really have like a good frame of reference for who I wanted to try to play like or anything like that. So, yeah, I had been like debating on whether to enter CAP as a guitar major or a electric bass major, because all throughout high school, I'd participated sort of in jazz band and vocal jazz. I was like the bass player in the rhythm section, jazz band, I was playing guitar. And so I was kind of doing both, but just teaching myself along the way. I didn't really have a teacher in either one. And, you know, so I was like reaching the end of high school and just wondering what to do with my life in general, you know, and I believe it was like one of my band teachers suggested that option. It's like, well, you can study music, you know, if you have an aptitude for it, you know, you could apply to CAP. I think CAP was the only school that I applied to, just because I was so like, okay, yeah, sure. I don't know what else to do, you know. So it just ended up working out that way. And at the last minute, I believe I emailed them and I was like, hey, I'd like to change my major from guitar to bass. Like, oh. I can't even think of what made me do that, but I was already going to do my audition on guitar. I think I might have been like prepping the audition materials and stuff, and then realizing like, I don't know if this is the way I want to go, you know? And so I just emailed them and said, hey, I can play electric bass too. I'd like to do my audition on that instrument. So,
and so then you did. You made the switch before you got there, electric bass.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I remember Arvind on his episode, he told a little of the story of how you met on your first day in your ensemble class. And he mentioned at the time that, yeah, you were playing electric bass.
Yeah.
Can you tell your side of that story?
Yeah, like Combo ended up being like probably my first class of Capilano. It was like the first day, like after orientation. And, you know, I didn't know anybody at all. And we got placed in these groups. And I'm trying to think of what tunes we were playing. Like maybe What Is This Thing Called Love or something like
Sounds
that.
About, you
know,
right.
Got assigned one of these standards. And I, you know, we were all super shy. We weren't really, it wasn't an outgoing group at the time. Of course, then we would all come to know each other and everything. But, you know, I heard Arvind playing drums in the way that he did with, you know, and I had been checking out some jazz records, and I heard him play some things that I guess I recognized. And afterwards I was like, man, you're playing like some Elvin Jones stuff, man. And I feel like he was kind of caught off guard by that remark, maybe. Cause yeah, I don't know, being a first year in college, it's like, I guess, playing like Elvin Jones, I don't know, might be kind of far-fetched, but you know, it's what I knew. Right. So,
yeah.
And, yeah, he talked to me afterwards and he's like, man, if you want to come over and work on some music and stuff, I'd love to. And eventually that ended up happening a lot later though, because I was really just sort of getting adjusted to the whole being in college type thing, right? But yeah, I just remember digging what he was playing immediately, you know, and just I think that might have been even my first time playing jazz in a small group like that, in a combo.
Yeah. So some people come in to Cap and they already dig jazz a lot, and that's why they're there. And then some people learn to love it as they're there. And it sounds like you're in that latter bucket, and that right around this time, then you really launched into your journey. We haven't even talked about upright bass yet, and we can in a second, but just about jazz in general, like it sounds like you were just about to launch into loving the music at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like I was, that's part of what went into the switch to upright bass, is I ended up checking out more music that actually had an upright bass in it. Right. And so I was hearing a lot of like that album, The Real McCoy, with Ron Carter playing bass, Ron Carter and Elvin. That was one which I really, really dug, even in like my last year of high school. Bill Evans Trio with Scott LaFaro. That was another one, which is, but I remember hearing the upright bass, but not thinking that I could do that. You know, I was like, I was more paying attention to the whole thing as a unit, but not like, oh man, I could be playing bass like Ron or Scotty, right? But it's like, eventually though, I realized like, I don't know, I feel like the music I wanted to make and the music I was listening to the most, it lent itself more to the upright. And so I talked to my PMI teacher, Andre Lachance, who I ended up studying with for the whole 4 years. And he actually told me he made a similar switch too. He started on electric and then halfway through the year, switched over, and that was it, right? So that kind of gave me some hope that it would be possible, even, you know, to just kind of change in the middle of it, right?
So when did you get an upright in your hands for the first time? What was it like?
I bought one in November. Well, my dad bought it for me.
Like 2 months after you enrolled?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But I didn't end up taking it to school or anything. It was something that I just had at home, and I was kind of trying to practice just how to hold it and how to, you know, position my fingers in the first position, not use my ring finger, stuff like that, right? And yeah, I wasn't taking lessons on it because I had already started my electric bass training, I guess. And it was a painful process, especially as I started playing more. And I only brought it to school like the next semester after that in January. And yeah, playing in combos and stuff like that, in ensembles, just like so many blisters. Like people would just look at my hands and they'd be like, Jesus, what happened to you, man? Because it was gnarly. It was really gnarly. And I was like pulling hard on the strings at the time too, because I didn't know that you didn't really have to do that, right? So I was just excited to play and just pulling super hard, probably with really bad technique. But, you know, I wanted to do it. You know, I wanted to play despite not knowing exactly, you know, the most efficient way to do it, right? I feel like that maybe would be a good way to explained my early experience on the upright bass is like not super efficient, but it's like, you know, the passion was there, right? It's like, yeah.
That's so funny. That resonates with me a lot. It reminds me of how at the similar point in my tenure there, I just played in my ensemble class, like my first year combo class, I guess, with no amplifier.
Right. Yeah.
Which is dumb. Like for a non-bass player, you're listening and you don't play bass. That's dumb. There's no reason to do that.
Yeah.
Like it's possible, but it's not advisable because you're going to have to play uncomfortably to be heard when everybody's playing in full volume, right?
Yeah, yeah. The way I see the no amp thing now is like you said, it can work, but in very specific scenarios. And I feel like maybe even with very specific types of players and everything, right? But
yeah, like say maybe you don't have a drummer, you know, that would be a great first step.
Yeah, and the room and like the instrument that you have and everything. But yeah, I was also, you know, I caught the whole no amp thing. It was like something that I wanted to do until I started like playing gigs regularly. And then I realized like, oh, wait, I have to use an amp, man. Like in, you know, in a room like Tangent, right? And if it got noisy or something, it's like you had to have that support, right?
Yeah. The earliest thing that I jotted down to ask you about, it wouldn't have been in this year. And then, you know, COVID would have started at the end of your first year. And that would have caused a bunch of turmoil up at CAP for sure, that I've heard, you know, different snippets of people's stories about from past episodes and such. But I know that the, like over a year after that, you played at a Blue Shore show with the Pat LaBarbera.
Mm.
Can you talk about that?
Oh man, yeah, that was a really great experience for me because it was also, I think, my first year being in the big band, in A band. Because before that, I hadn't actually, I'd just done like the guitar and bass ensemble that you're in first year. They put you in that.
I did that.
Yeah. And then, which was a good time, you know, I enjoyed it. It was like really fun music and everything. But then when the pandemic hit, yeah, I kind of didn't really want to be, for various reasons, I had some anxiety about coming out into public spaces, right? And being in crowds of people. It's like, you know, COVID was something that kind of affected my family and kind of, I ended up having a lot more anxiety about it than more people. And so I chose not to be in like a larger ensemble. I was only doing combo at the time and then the rest of it was online. So I had my bubble of people, right? But I wasn't really getting out that much besides just for that one combo class. So then the next year, once everything kind of opened up, I auditioned and got into the A band. And man, yeah, getting to work with Pat as a guest artist was like, I would say one of the defining like musical moments of my life, just getting to hear that kind of sound in person, right? And that caliber of player. And then the stories he had about the people he's played with, right? I mean, you know, getting to play with someone who played with Elvin, right? It's like, I don't know, there's so much history just in one man that's, and you're in the room with him making music with him. It's like, it's a special feeling, you know? And of course, you know, I'm not sure if at that point I had played with some of my profs too, but you know, it's a similar feeling playing with them as well, right? It's because they're sort of elders of the scene and have all this knowledge and experiences of playing with different people. But with Pat, it's like, you know, it was just shocking to like look at his discography and see who he's played with and everything. And also just hear that sound in person. It's like, yeah, yeah, it was really something.
Did you get to talk to him too, one-on-one, or was it mostly just class and playing?
It was mostly, he did a master class in 113, and then we played with him as a small ensemble, the A-band rhythm section. It was Harrison Ives and Seth Kitamura, and who was playing piano? It was Ben Millman, yeah. And so he kind of spoke to us a little bit about like what we were going to play exactly and intros and endings, but that was kind of, you know, he just showed up and we planned out what we were going to do and then we played and then he was like, you know, sounds great, you guys. But it's almost like not much more than that needed to be said, right? It's just like getting up there and playing with him, and Brad was there too, and then Steve as well. It was just, yeah, I don't know. It changed my musical life, definitely.
Yeah, it sounds like you and Arvind, you had that connection where you started jamming together right away. And so then when you start playing gigs together, it's a natural extension of that. There's two other people who you play with very often, and there's an album that you're on with them that we'll talk about later. But I want to talk about those two people and when your relationship started cementing with both of them. So we'll start with Brad Turner. Obviously, you probably had him in your first year for something. He mm-hmm. was your instructor. You played with him a lot in different venues now as a person out there in the real world. When did you start to deepen that musical collaboration with Brad?
I think this must have happened like in my third year. So like when it was already coming out of the pandemic, that's when we started playing together more. And I remember distinctly because I was roommates with Arvind at the time. And I don't remember if Arvind orchestrated it or if Brad maybe asked to play with us or something. But one day Arvind's just like, oh, Brad's coming over for a session on Sunday at noon, right? And I was just like, what? You know, I had not played with him in that capacity before outside of school. And it was just like super shocking. And then he came, you know, he pulled up at the house at noon. And I don't know, I just remember it being kind of funny. It's like, he's like in our place. And then we just like jammed for a couple hours. And, you know, he pointed out some things about how we were playing. But, you know, he seemed to enjoy it, right? And so that's how that kind of relationship sort of started, is he would come over periodically and we would play as a trio. And then I think a couple times Arvind invited over a couple horn players or something. But, you know, yeah, just him coming over to the house. I think, yeah, I don't really have the story straight of how that started. It's just something that Arvind told me one day. He's like, oh, Brad's coming over for a session. And we were super pumped about that.
Is this like geographically based too? Like, were you all up in Deep Cove or something?
No, the place where I lived with Arvind is actually in East Van.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on sort of like Victoria and Kingsway.
Okay.
And yeah, I know Brad's out in Poco, I guess close to where we are right now.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, what was he playing? Was he playing trumpet or piano?
Oh no, this was on piano.
Yeah.
And I remember, because I believe, I don't know when our first gig was, if it was at Tyrant or the one at Tangent.
I'll tell you what the first one I have was. It was at Prez House, actually.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
in October 2022. That's right. The earliest one I had.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if it's actually the first one, but that was the earliest one I had. And that's pretty early. That's 1.5 years ago or so, yeah.
Yeah, because he you know, started when we first were jamming. It was on piano. And then I believe, like, I don't know, he kind of expressed some apprehension because I asked him about it, like switching between trumpet and piano in one gig. And I don't know if he was like super down to do it, but then one day he, in one of these sessions, like he did it. And then we ended up doing that. Like, we had this gig at Tyrant where he kind of played both and switched off for different songs. And yeah, I guess so. It was kind of both instruments.
Yeah, that gig at Tyrant, I have that too, December 2022, not long after that.
Right.
Yeah. And this was also when you were playing with Noah, with the Tenpenny Trio. You were doing that at the same time too. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was all during this period where it was very convenient to play with people, you know, living with Arvind, because, you know, we just invited people over. He didn't have to coordinate with me when I would show up. And so,
yeah.
Yeah, I guess these relationships were forged. And, you know, playing with Noah, that was an awesome thing. You know, we played a lot of his music. Some of Arvind's music was just super fun time, you know.
Yeah.
Super enthusiastic, I believe. You know, that was something that kind of impacted me, was like Noah and Arvind's enthusiasm to keep trying different stuff. And we would meet every week and everything. It's like, yeah, that was a nice thing to be a part of.
And you were like, yeah, like 20 years old, 21 years old, something like that.
Yeah. So much of that stuff went over my head, like musically speaking. I don't know. Like, I think back to it now and it's like, man, I've changed so much as a player and everything that I, you know, we got to get back together and do that again. You know, I'd definitely like to continue playing with both of those guys.
So you feel like Arvind is somebody who introduced you to a lot of other people?
For sure, yeah. Because I'm not really like a social guy or like a big networker or anything. I kind of just, you know, I just play and do my thing, and you know, I have my group of friends or whatever. But Arvind is very, very outgoing, very social. He gets along well with lots of people, and so yeah, I have to really give him credit for sort of putting in a good word for me or introducing me to lots of people, because that was one thing that kind of helped me get out there, is like doing those really early gigs with him. Like even in 2019, like when we were just first years, you know, he was out there, you know, meeting people and booking gigs and stuff.
Yeah. I have somebody who introduced me similarly. When I was shy and when I was around that age, it was Julian Jaime. He did that for many people too. He introduced people, a lot of people, to a lot of people. So it's good to have those when you have that personality type, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's not a situation that I would have tried to put myself in, you know, thinking about, you know, self-doubt and feeling like I'm behind already on my instrument and everything, you know. But yeah, I guess it's the only way. It's just, you just got to put yourself out there.
Yeah. Did you try and like dig in as hard as you possibly could on the upright and kind of get up to speed super duper fast because you felt like that? Because you felt like you were starting late or starting behind?
Yeah, definitely. That was a big part of it, because I had a lot of anxiety about switching halfway through the term. And I thought for whatever reason it would put me at a disadvantage. And yeah, I had always had that thought in the back of my mind when I was learning it, I got to really sort of play catch up with everyone else and, you know, get this stuff together, right?
Yeah. Was that more of a motivational feeling for you, like you liked it, or was it a struggle?
It was a struggle at first, but then I feel like eventually I just learned to live with that feeling, you know? Mm. And I don't know if maybe that's something that people can attribute to like being a good sideman, but like I just became okay with feeling maybe a little uncomfortable in musical situations and stuff, and like feeling kind of like I'm being challenged and, you know, just maybe even a little bit out of my element. I just thought, you know, the only way is to just kind of jump into it, for me at least, right? It's like I got used to that feeling of like, yeah, feeling like I'm out of my element or like it's a challenge, you know. So at first it was like a cause of a lot of anxiety for me, but then I was just happy to do it, you know. So
however it started, you took it and you ended up turning it into a positive contributor to your life.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Yeah, that I try to, I mean, I could definitely use more of that outlook in other aspects of my life outside of music, but for music, definitely that's how I like to view it.
Yeah. So the other person I wanted to know the origin of the relationship, especially, was Atli. So where does Atli enter into the picture?
Yeah, I think we met through Arvind. Yeah. And when I was in my first year, I think he was wrapping up at CAP already. So I had seen him, you know, seen him around definitely in the hallways. And, you know, we hadn't really gotten the chance to play though until at CAP there's a percussion ensemble, and Dave Robbins is the director of it, and it just so happened that like Arvind and Atli were in it at the same time, so I guess that's how they met and got to know each other. But Atli was playing vibes and they needed a bass player for a concert, and I was still on electric at the time, and Dave Robbins, who didn't know me at all, I was walking down with my bass and he's like, "Hey, are you a bass player?" And I was, "Yeah, I am." And he's like, "Oh, well, how would you like to play for this concert in the Blue Shorts?" Just one tune that they needed me. And so I was like, "Yeah, I'll do it." And that's how I kind of got to play with Atli the first time. I remember the tune. It was Shawnuff by Dizzy Gillespie. And yeah, I guess he liked the way I was playing on rhythm changes on electric bass at the time. I don't know, but he said some really positive things about what I was doing, and yeah, it just went from there. We ended up jamming a lot at the place he was staying at the time. And yeah, but he was another one, I guess, who from the very beginning of Cap, like I knew him, you know.
That was it. So that was in your first year. That was in that very,
very first
early
year. Yeah.
Wow.
Like before I even picked up the upright, I guess he had already played with me.
Yeah. Oh, well now let's just go for the completion then. So when do you get to know Max Huberto?
Probably in that sphere of like, I guess in 2019, I don't know if we've played together though, until like during the pandemic. Cause I remember the first gig I did with him and I was just getting to know him was, I don't know if it was 2020 or 2021 at this place called Seymour's Pub where they had live music from time to time. And he had this trio gig with me and Arvind. And that was the first time we had performed together. But I really can't nail down when I met him, but probably in that 2019 to 2020, like all these people I knew through Arvind and my friend Jay as well, Jay Christie, who was at Cap at the time. Also an incredible drummer, jazz drummer, and he writes really great music too. You know, the three of us, we were kind of just jamming with all these different people and I was getting acquainted with people on the scene. I was so shy at that time though that I don't think I was like really introducing myself properly. I was just kind of there and you know, they'd call me up to play and I'd play and then go home or something, you know? It's like,
yeah. I'm glad to hear you say that because that's how I felt at that age. I think that's how a lot of us felt at that age too. Yeah, and it's fine. It works out.
Yeah, I mean now I've got all these connections that I made. It's like I love these guys, man. You know, they're super close to me and love to play with them. So yeah, I'm glad it all happened the way it did.
Yeah. Speaking of it all happening the way it did, so all these people who we just talked about, they are the band led by Atli that's on the Atli King Unconditional, this album. This is like the first studio album to come out that features your playing. I have no doubt it will not be the last, but it came out in the fall of 2023. You played it beautifully at Jazz at the Bolt at the Studio Theater just a couple months ago. And that album is Atli, Brad, Max Huberto, yourself, and Arvind. Mm-hmm. So like the five people that we've just happened to talk the most about over some of these formative years for you. And I mean, I haven't done an episode with Atli yet. It would be fun to do it at some point soon, I'm sure. But that means I haven't had a chance to really hear about the story of that album or something. So maybe we could talk a little bit about it, that those people... You know, these are all people who are your close collaborators and who you met early on. And then at some point, they became a band that made an album. So how did that shape up? How did that group of people come together to become that band and getting into that album? What was that like?
Man, yeah, I remember at least, I mean, there was like one tune that ended up being part of the Unconditional book. I don't think it got recorded, though, that I think there was a night when I was over at Atli's place in like 2019 or something. And he was like, hey, I got this idea for this tune. And he played it on piano. And then Jay was on drums and I was playing bass. And it's like, I would imagine that this music was like kind of floating around in his head for years. I haven't really asked him about it, but like we first got together for rehearsals probably in like 2021, 2022. And it was a different... Well, it was all the same except Sam Bagley was playing tenor instead of Brad on trumpet. But most of the music that was recorded on the album, it was already written. It was already, you know, we were just rehearsing it and going through it. But he had it like fully fleshed out, you know. And I remember us rehearsing it a lot, and he had sort of aspirations. He's like, I want to do a lot of gigs with this group. I want to record it and everything. And it's just, I could tell it's something that meant a lot to him personally. And, you know, hearing you say like that I met all of these people in my formative musical years, I guess, you know, that recorded album, I guess, means a lot to me in that way too, because it's all of these people that have influenced me greatly, and we all just got together and, you know, recorded this stuff that means a lot to Atlee, right?
I think on the album you can hear people kind of like either cheering each other on or like reacting to each other's playing. Like you can hear people kind of talking or cheering in the background, right?
Oh man. Yeah, yeah, there could have been some of that. Arvind was in a separate room. I remember that, Arvind and Brad. Yeah.
Where did you record it?
This was at Monarch, Studios.
Yeah, so they were in the big room and live room, and then...
Yeah, and then Brad was in the booth, and Arvind was in another area, yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, Atlee brought all the music together, and he brought you together when it was time to like go on that project, yeah.
Yeah, but I remember even previously just hanging with him, either at his place or at Cap. I'm pretty sure I must have heard these tunes being played by him. Like he must have like showed them to me or something. So I feel like the process of writing that album must have taken place over like years and years, you know?
Yeah. I heard the addition of the band with Sam Baglier at Frankie's. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly when. It was probably like back around the time that you played with Pat LaVarvra and like that period of time when it feels like this big emergence time where it, you know, you mentioned how you dealt with COVID and that's when things began to kind of open up again. But it feels like there was just kind of this fast emergence for you from that point when, and then it just starts and then you're playing with everybody, but it's like, it had time to build leading up to that. I think I heard the Atlee play the Unconditional music and Sam was playing saxophone. I think I heard it at Frankie's around that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I remember that gig. Yeah. And that might've been like one of my first times ever playing at Frankie's too, if I can, if I remember correctly.
Of course, now you could never count how many times you've done it.
Oh man. Well, you know, it's just, yeah, that night it was like a lot of, there must have even been some anxiety on my part about like even just getting out into the public again, right? As things were opening back up. But yeah, yeah, that was, yeah, I remember that night fondly.
Yeah. Then I was looking at, now we're fast forwarding another year. So now we're talking about last year. Because this year's Jazz Fest, of course, it hasn't happened yet. You know, last year's Jazz Fest, around that time, you actually played quite a few gigs. They were club gigs. They were kind of the clubs, like you played at Second Floor. You know, you played at places not on like the kind of Granville Island Jazz Fest stages or something. But you played trio with Brad and Sharon a couple times, right?
Yeah.
And I know now you've played with Sharon a whole bunch of times too. Is that kind of when you started to play with her?
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I think maybe the first time we got to play was through the Shadbolt Center jam. And that's at the start of like this whole new set of connections that I made. Yeah. I guess last year, a couple of years ago, sort of, I mean, I could pinpoint where that kind of began too,
okay,
if you want, but it was, I remember John Lee asking me to sub for this gig at Frankie's, which was with Champion Fulton. And so that was the first time I think I'd met Corey or even got a chance to play with him or anything. And yeah, and then since then, you know, he's asked me to be on the Shadbolt Jam thing. And that's, you know, gave me the opportunity to play with Jesse Cahill for the first time and play with Sharon. And, you know, it's on like a semi-regularly basis. You know, monthly, except in the
it's pretty much monthly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of where that started. But then the trio with Brad and Sharon also was like a really great thing, you know, just getting to work with him on original music and stuff. This was like some of the tunes that we played were ones that he recorded on that record with Neil Swainson and Peter Bernstein is the Magnificent. But those were like super formative gigs for me too, because I don't know, just getting to be in a trio, like in a drumless setting where I was so exposed like that, you know, that was honestly like pretty scary to me. And also, you know, getting to know Sharon's playing as well and like having that experience and, you know, seeing how they both interacted, having played together so much in the past, right? And yeah, it was, we played at Fabrique also, and but those were like really memorable times for me, I would say.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought up the Champion Fulton thing because, you know, in the first year of the gig list, I was not yet very good at making sure I always documented all the people in every band. So there's a lot of 2022, early 2023 gig list archive stuff where only the band leader's name is there. So when I searched for what you played, you know, I wasn't able to find that you did that. I'm very happy that you brought it up, and I want to hear more about that because I wasn't ready for that. Tell me about this Champion Fulton gig and when it was and all that stuff too, because I didn't have that.
Yeah, man, that was another. It was like super last minute, and I was just called in to sub for him on bass, and again, super nervous playing with someone who's like from out of town who I don't really know. Is like just a tremendously talented singer and pianist and everything. But you know, she made it super, super easy for me because she had a book of tunes that was already laid out. And, you know, like she would just call them out and I would flip to them. And it was just a lot of fun, you know, and getting to play with Corey for the first time too. And with Graham Vallette also on drums, who's someone I really enjoy playing with. I think that was our first time also, you know, meeting and playing. And it was two nights that we did. And I don't know. A lot of connections were made on those gigs, I guess.
Yeah, because I was going to say that what one of the things that followed from that I've seen you do, and you've played with this show more than once, is you played with Corey and his dad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, those are also like very fun gigs. And I guess they stem from that sort of... that night when we played together, because I got the call. I think we did a couple corporate things with Corey and Bill, and then playing at Frankie's a couple times with them, and it's just so much fun to see like the dynamic between Corey and Bill, and like, you know, they're like cracking jokes at each other and stuff. It's like, I don't know, those are always like super wholesome nights when they play. You know, it's like there's a big like family kind of vibe in the whole room and everything. And also, you know, those gigs kind of gave me the opportunity to play with Joe Poole for the first time. I know Miles Black was on piano for one of those, I believe. So it's just more and more connections and people that I wouldn't have otherwise have played with kind of stemmed from that, which is, you know, it's cool. It's cool to, I have to give a lot of credit, right, to like John Lee and Corey and, you know, these different people who've put me in situations where, you know, I've gotten to meet people musically and grow, and yeah, it's just a really great thing.
Have you and John played together?
Yes, yeah. I don't know if we've done a gig together, but definitely like whenever he's up at Jazz House or different sessions and things, I've played with him on drums, yeah, and piano, and it's always, man, yeah, it's always like a huge learning experience for me, you know. And, but he also, you know, he's given me like a lot of words of support and stuff and, you know, put my name in for different gigs and things like that. So I really appreciate him, not only from like a teacher perspective, but also just, you know, connecting me to different people. Right.
Do you feel a time, or maybe it was this time or some other time around here, do you feel there was a time when something unlocked or shifted and all of a sudden a lot of people started calling you, or that you started being called for things, and that it's been like, and that you shifted gears or something and that started happening? Do you feel like there was a certain point when that happened, or maybe that it was just more gradual? How do you think about that?
I don't know, because like I'll get calls from people who I kind of know already, you know, mostly like, I guess people who are kind of around my age who know of me from different social groups, but like getting calls from like random people who I've never met before, I feel like that may have started just in the last couple years. Probably now that I'm doing some things that might have given me more of exposure than previously, right? Like, you know, getting to play at the Shad Bolt and everything, gigs at Frankie's and things like that. It's just like getting my name out there to people who I wouldn't have sort of rubbed shoulders with, right?
Yeah. And there's a lot of both. I mean, you're on some bigger gigs. You're on some gigs with people your own age. You've been at the Lido a few times. Hmm. You know, there's only been so many Lido gigs because it's a monthly series, but you've been there a few times. You played there with Clayton, who I know and love because he was my neighbor when I lived in New West. And, you know, he went to New Westminster Secondary School where I went. So love that guy. I think you've been at the Lido at least one or two more times with other people's bands. So there's that kind of thing. But then there's, you know, you get put on. You're with Champion Fulton. You're with Corey, and you're with, you know, Andre or whoever else. Yeah. So there's a lot of both, even just within jazz, even just within this community, there's a lot of both.
Yeah, for sure. Man, those gigs with Andre were really great. Cause getting to play with John Gross too. And yeah, it was nice to, you know, I felt a certain amount of pressure leading up to those moments just cause I'd been studying with him for all the 4 years. So it's like, okay, this is it. You know, it's time to show everything that I've been working on and it, but you know, once we just started making music, it just felt so, so fun, right? Just so, so relaxed, right?
Yeah. You've described like a range of comfort and how you've dealt with it. Like some gigs that feel they have a real strong comfort about them. And then there's some situations where you felt out of your element, like you said earlier, like that puts you in a learning mode kind of thing. There's always a little bit of both, but it seems like no matter what gig you're doing, you're always kind of aware of both of where that is and where you're positioned.
Yeah. I try and keep them both in check. Right. Cause I also don't want to be in a space where I'm too relaxed and just kind of going through the motions. Right. Cause we're still trying to create something. Right. And channel something through our instruments, you know, whatever that may be. But you know, I guess the biggest thing for me is like just regulating the anxiety. And like you said, like shifting into more of a learning mode than like a, I don't know if I'm cut out for this mode.
Somebody we haven't brought up yet, Ardashir. I've heard you play with him a couple times. You've played in like a quartet setting with him several times, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With Graham and Winston. And then there was also that, we did a recording and then a gig at Tangent as well with Saul Burson.
You did a recording?
Yes. I don't believe it's out, but there are plans.
I haven't heard that yet.
There are plans for it to be put out. I haven't heard the recording yet, but yeah. I know Arvind has heard it. And, Ardashir asked me, you know, is it okay if I put this out? So it is planned to come out, but yeah, the Ard and Saul project and then his own quartet with Graham and Winston. And, you know, we've done other gigs too. I feel like under Arvind's name, where he's been on there.
And Saul.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Such a fun guy, you know, and just like super fun to play with. And just the energy that he brings and the enthusiasm. It's just, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Another gig that kind of puts you in the recent history of the scene or whatever that you did that I really wanted to go to that I missed is you got to play with Evan Arntzen and James Dannifer. That was few months ago before the new year. That was at Frankie's, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. That was one of them where I was kind of nervous when I got the call because I saw who it was and I'm like, oh shit. You know, it's like, yeah. It was a really fun time though as well. And just kind of getting to know Evan and his music and his way of playing and the history, you know, his whole family being musicians and everything. That was a super, super interesting experience getting to hang and play with him a little bit. And there was something that happened that night, like the fire alarm went off while we were playing and it was like on for like 30 minutes or something.
Oh no.
It was like, but you know, he continued, you know, we just played with the fire alarm. Like he didn't stop the show just for that, even though I was kind of looking around thinking like, man, are we supposed to leave right now or something? But it was, yeah, that was a great time. And you know, Joe Poole was there and Chris Jestrin on piano. It's like these guys that I don't get to play with super often. So every time it happens, I always really try and take advantage of that, you know, and trying to remember, trying to see if I can glean some things about my own playing and just see how it feels to play with people of that caliber, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I get the sense that you just kind of have this patience about you, whether you acknowledge it or not. Maybe it's just like your natural disposition, but it just seems like you are rolling with all these opportunities as they come. You're like, I'll enjoy them as they come. It doesn't feel to me like you ever feel rushed, like you have to go out there and make something happen or that you have to push it forward. It seems like you have this patient timing about all these different people that you play with where it, as it happens, it happens. It's interesting. I think it's actually really cool and admirable in a lot of ways, but I think that's something I notice, I guess.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess so. I never, you know, it was never my aim to like try and be like a jazz star or whatever that means. Right. But you know,
yeah,
just kind of relish in the experiences. Right. Cause that's what it's all about. It's like, oh, I got to experience what it's like to play with, you know, Brad Turner, or like, you know, playing to the cymbal beat of like Joe Poole or something like that. It's like, man, it's just a whole experience on its own.
I want to go all the way back around to where you're at as a leader and just check if you have anything in development on that front or what you think you might do the next time something like that comes your way and you step out as a leader. Where are you at in terms of band leader mode, you know, looking ahead now instead of all this back?
Yeah. It's not something I've thought of a ton. You know, the opportunities that I've gotten to lead bands have been things that have sort of come up organically. Like I'll get an email from someone saying, hey, would you like to, you know, and then I sort of just rise to the occasion and get it all together. But I've been trying to write more music recently, especially because like I was in a combo this year and it's like my last time getting to do that, right? It's like regularly rehearsing with like people.
Combo class at CAP.
At CAP, right, yeah. And, you know, that's like, we meet like 3 times a week or something. And so I was just kind of thinking, how often am I going to get this opportunity to play with the same guys for, you know, 3 times a week for 4 months or whatever. So I kind of put a challenge to myself to at least write a couple more tunes. Cause I have like one or two from like a long time ago that I just wrote, you know, and never really did anything with, but it's tricky. You know, I have a lot of self-doubt about, how it sounds and everything. And like, if I could even construct a whole set of material, right? Like how to structure that. And it's like, should I write for the opportunity to get a gig or should I just write for my, you know, I got to write for myself too, right? It's just, yeah, I it's definitely a learning process for me right now. I'm just trying to force myself to do it more often so I get used to the craft of it, right?
Yeah. And that, I think that reflects a lot of what you just said a couple minutes ago. Like, I think that's that patience that we were discussing, whether or not that exists. I think you just kind of spoke to that right now. Mm-hmm. Like you were like, oh yeah, when I play as a leader, it's because somebody else has given me a call. So I'm like, yeah, that's what I was saying.
Right. Yeah. No, it's definitely something I would like to do more though. And once I get more time to really dedicate, you know, figure out like the group and everything and figure out my own compositions and things like that. You know, that is kind of like a long-term goal of mine, even to maybe record some stuff that I write, you know, just to have something under my name to show, you know, yeah, exactly. Like my perspective and where I'm coming from. Right.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people hate this question. It's not always a very productive one to ask, but I want to do it because I think it's fun when you catch an answer to this and it doesn't have to be a comprehensive one. It doesn't even have to be true to any extent, you know, when you revisit it a couple of years down the road. But you're in your fifth year at CAP. You're finishing up there. What do you think? Where do you think you're going to head after you wrap up your time at CAP?
I don't know if I'm going to go anywhere right away, if that makes sense. Like I feel like there's more that could be done here, you know, for me, there's more growth to be done and like more people to play with and just, yeah, I just want to keep playing gigs here and stuff and see what happens. You know, it's just, I don't feel as though I'm in a rush to go somewhere or try and, you know, make it somewhere else, right? It's just that's my plan, at least, is just kind of see what it's like to just stay here and continue to play gigs and stuff, and, you know, see what I end up doing for the financial aspect of things too, because that's kind of not something that's at the forefront of my mind right now, but I know it will be very soon, right? But I'm not really in a rush to get out of Vancouver or anything.
Yeah. Know? Oh yeah. I didn't even have to be like where you headed a place on a map, but just like different things that you could be doing. Yeah, for sure.
I just want to keep playing.
Yeah.
Just as much as I can, you know, that's what sort of keeps me going. It's just, the next gig, right? It's like, you know, practicing different things and like the social component and all of it, you know. It's just, yeah, that's all. Well, I'm not going to say that's all I want to do, but, you know, yeah, that's definitely something that I would like to continue to do a lot, you know, a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes total sense. And we want you to do that too, because we want to keep going out and hearing you play. So
that's a
good fit. One group that I've heard you play in that we haven't talked about was Sava's Iranian Quartet. I haven't played every gig with that, but I've heard you at least once in that configuration. I think that's an interesting one because so many of the other groups we talked about are very ensconced in what you would call like the straight ahead tradition. And that's not necessarily like full on free jazz, what you played with Sava, not really, but it comes from a different place and it's like a new addition to what, you know, if somebody goes out and hears you, a lot of the time what they are going to hear, and it must be reflective of your taste to some extent, is the stuff you would hear at the 8 p.m. shows at Frankie's and when you're playing with somebody like Corey or Ard Sheeran Saul, or, you know, the straight ahead swinging stuff is so much of what you play. And then there's an example of something else. You might have played other kinds of gigs that I didn't quite catch and in styles that are further away from that. Do you think about that, or is it not something that comes up to you, like kind of which sub genre you end up spending your time in or what calls you there? What do you think about that?
No, it is something that I have thought about, definitely. And, you know, playing in Sava's groups is super refreshing, just at least, you know, like, cause she's also done sort of like straight ahead kind of jazz gigs as well. And I've played on those with her, but with her Iranian groups, it's like, there's a whole other thing of like listening that I have to do. Like, how does improvising sound in that idiom? It's like, you know, these are like deep questions that you could really research a lot. And, you know, Sava has those musical roots, right? Like in traditional Iranian music. So, you know, I'll end up asking her a lot about, like, you know, what do I do on this tune? Or what? So it's a refreshing thing for me to be involved in something like that. And yeah, I'd like to do more of that sort of thing as well. Even music kind of like from where I'm from, you know, I'm trying to figure out, like, I don't know, go out to see more bands playing like music from South America, even possibly if there's like a Peruvian musicians community somewhere out there, you know, trying to find out where that is and see if I can get in on that, you know, just to sort of reconnect to that whole side of things, you know. It's just, yeah, it's a big world out there, a lot of different things to try, but I'm interested in those types of things, right?
I can think of a couple bands who I've gone out to see who play in South American styles, fusion styles, that are here. And even though they're not necessarily exactly reflective of where you come from, have you gone to see bands like this? I can think of one or two. I can think of Los Duendes. I can think of Empanadas Ilegales, you know.
Right.
I can think of those kind of sounds. You know, what have you come across in Vancouver in terms
now,
of
honestly,
that?
I have to get out more and see those groups play. I still have yet to sort of branch out beyond the jazz side of things.
Yeah.
You know, it's more of like a sort of desire of mine, which I'll probably do soon.
Yeah, because like Los Duendes, there's a few of our friends who play. I think for sure Seb Chamney plays in that band.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Empanadas Ilegales, I know Gordy plays a bunch of gigs with them. I can't remember who else. Maybe they're both more on the Colombian music side.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, I don't know very much about, because I don't speak Spanish at all, and I don't know very much about like the Spanish language fusion styles of music here in Vancouver. But I mean, there's like the Latincouver festival that has connections with jazz musicians, like the Carnaval del Sol.
Hmm.
Yeah, so there's a few kind of like big tents where I guess that stuff pops up. But people who are very if you really know what you're looking for and you know where you came from, like what do you actually find when you really dig down and you look to see if there's Peruvian musicians or Ecuadorian musicians or whatever?
Yeah,
like, I mean, there's Brazilian musicians too. That's on a whole other wavelength.
But for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. There, I'm sure, you know, it's a big enough city that there's probably a lot there.
Yeah. And that's another thing where I'm kind of approaching it from knowing almost nothing, because like, despite my background, the kind of traditional music side of it was never really emphasized for me.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents ended up always listening to stuff from overseas more, like stuff, you know, rock music and things like that from the United States or from England. So it was never a huge part of my life, but it's kind of something I want to investigate more into. And I don't know, people might see it. You know, people might see David Caballero's Peruvian ensemble or something. I don't know. But, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Oh, sure. It'd be great. Yeah. And you lived here since you were two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, I'm definitely as Canadian as someone could be, I guess, you know, it's like, yeah.
Do you go back there often?
No, I went back there a couple of years ago, and that was like the second time, because I had gone back when I was, I believe, like 7 years old. But this last time that I came back as an adult now, it's like made a huge impression on me. And I'm even thinking of like going back in the summer and like trying to make it a more like a yearly thing, just to see what it's like. You know, there's a whole family aspect too, like visiting relatives and stuff. But also it's like, man, this is where my parents and whole family lived for forever, you know? So it's like, I want to kind of get to know what it's like more, you know?
This summer. Yeah.
Possibly. If I can find a flight that's not too crazy expensive.
Because I imagine you've probably gotten some calls to play some gigs in late June. So those haven't really been announced yet, but
no.
they'll come at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess there's a couple things I'd have to work around, but.
Yeah. So there's one other group that we haven't talked about. That's my guy, Ben Frost, previous Rhythm Changes podcast guest, guy I started playing with way back in our first year at CAP, you know, 12, 13 years ago or something. And you've played with him a bunch too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I believe maybe we've played in like three iterations of a group, and it's always with Miles Wong on drums.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we played a couple gigs at Tangent, one of them with Noah, French Nolan being the pianist, and then another one with Atlee on vibes, and then most recently with Brad on piano as well. And I just wanted to bring that one up just because it's like the way Ben leads a band and like playing all his music and everything was something that's kind of, I kind of would like that to be a model for how I do things, sort of, just because he gives everyone so much space to just do what they do, right? And I've heard it in different configurations with, right, like hearing Noah, how Noah dealt with the music and how Atlee did and how Brad did. And each of them brought their own thing, but it's always got this, like, I don't know, this kind of like Ben vibe to it, regardless of like who's playing it or anything. You know, it's just, it's really something to witness, like in the rehearsal process and in the, like playing the gigs with those guys, you know? And those are gigs that I really kind of hold dearly to in my memory, right? It's like super influential moments for me.
When you have handwritten charts like that, it always makes it more special.
Oh man, yeah. And he can really just, he's really good at just like setting up a certain vibe, even just in the count off of a tune. It's like you get put into this headspace, and yeah, it's just beautiful.
I'm glad you said that, because he's a quiet, humble dude, and he wouldn't, you know, if I'm talking with him, he's not going to say that. So it's a cool insight that you're saying that's a way that he makes a group feel great.
Definitely.
Group. Yeah. I want to hear, to wrap it up here, maybe just a little bit about what you're expecting to play this week coming up, like with Daniel Herzog and Ben Henriquez and with Arvin's group. Like, maybe you've started rehearsing for those already, or maybe you haven't, but just like what is going to go down at each of those gigs?
Yeah.
Anything you want to talk about related to those people or those gigs?
Yeah. The Herzog Henriquez one is, it's really interesting, because it's original music from both Dan and Ben. And actually, people might get to hear one of my tunes as well. They've incorporated one of them into their book, you know. And yeah, we've played a couple gigs before, and once previously with Bernie on drums, who I believe is the drummer for this one at Frankie's. And yeah, that's going to be exciting, more like kind of modern jazz type of things, right? And kind of explore it. It's a chordless group, right? So that kind of opens things up a lot as well. You know, and Ben's original music is something that's new to me. Dan's, you know, I've played with him over the years at Cap and gotten familiar with some of his tunes, but yeah, it's very exciting. And getting to play with Bernie too is always so much fun for me. You know, it's so much interplay there, and just, yeah, it's a super fun group to play with. And with this this group with Arvind, we actually, that came about like just from a hang one day when we all happened to be over at his place, right? Like Nick Leffler and Atlee and Max. I think it might have even, I don't know if it was after the Shadbolt, like one of those, like after some event, I don't know, something like that. And we were just playing a bunch of tunes that we all like, and Arvind was like, man, I want to get some gigs with this group, you know? And so they've already played at Frankie's, minus me and Atlee, because we were unavailable. But, you know, I expect it'll be, you know, just a lot of fun swinging material, right?
Yeah, you and Arvind at Tyrant, that's a thing. I've heard that. I've heard that before. It always sounds great. It's a great sounding room.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That's a special place. Well, I'm a big fan of yours. When I see your name, I always want to come down and hear you. You always sound awesome. I had a lot of fun chatting with you. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Rhythm Changes podcast. If you enjoyed it, become a member for free today at rhythmchanges.ca. You'll get the free weekly email featuring artists, events, and recordings from our scene. I will send it to you every Tuesday morning. Rhythm Changes is a Chernoff Music production. This episode was hosted and produced by me, edited and mixed by Justin Gorey. And I will catch you very soon on a future episode of this show. Take care. Have a good one.